And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I am your host, Lauren Conaway. Some of you might remember me, but I am back for a very, very special episode that we are putting together for Women's History Month. And I am absolutely, absolutely psyched to be here, psyched to have our guest. Really want to tell you all about her because she's one of my heroes. But before I do that, I have to tell you about another one of my heroes. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers can be difficult, but Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and they have the platform to help you manage that team. You can visit Fullscale.io or check the link in the show notes to learn more. All right, friends. So when I sat down, when Matt Watson and I were talking about doing this Women's History Month episode, we sat down and we asked ourselves, who is an amazing woman operating within the startup space that we could tap to celebrate this month in the way that it deserves to be celebrated? And the answer that we came up with, she is a hero to me, as I said, but she's really a hero to the world. We have with us today Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace, president and CEO of the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation. And I am sure that many of you have heard of the Kauffman Foundation and the incredible work they do to support entrepreneurship in our world. Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace, thank you so much for coming to the show. We are so excited to have you.
Oh, thank you for hosting me. This is so exciting to sit down in this conversation and just to have time to think and talk about the work we do, the journey that we have, and to spend time this month also reflecting on leadership and women leaders. Like, those are the things that, I don't know, for me, just excite me.
Same. You and I share that, especially that I don't think it's any surprise to anybody who has ever listened to my episodes of the show that I like talking about women and the amazing things that women do. But really, I love talking about innovative, resourceful, creative, persistent people, that entrepreneurial mindset. And so I really want to dig into that with you, Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace. And I'd love for you, can you tell us about your journey? I would love to hear this.
So as I chuckle, because Lauren has heard bits and pieces of my journey, so this is fun for us, right? So, you know, my journey, I talk about it as being, I've always called it, I think, eclectic, but sitting in this role, I think I am now saying it's entrepreneurial in its own way, right? That spirit.
Right.
My career started in federal government, would then move into higher education, state government, and now philanthropy. And so along my journey, what I kind of put as that through line is really service, being in service in communities, working and sitting in roles and with organizations that have the ability to influence policy, resources, technical assistance, things that help a particular community and individuals be able to access new and different opportunities, be able to access resources that are available. So I started my career as a diplomat in the Foreign Service, and I served and lived in places like Guangzhou and Beijing, China, South Africa, and Washington, D.C. And I would do that for about the first 10 years of my career, and really being able to work on the ground in those countries, helping to build infrastructure, helping to work alongside individuals in education, in government, in civic environments to help build and strengthen their countries. in their communities using U.S. resources. I would shift at a point in time, right around the time that the world shifted. So my shift from government into higher education was right around the time of our war on Iraq. And the world began to change, as we know, during that time period. And some of the work that we did in the diplomatic space shifted. And that impact on communities began to shift. So for me, I moved into higher education, which I thought would be for a moment, and turned into a 15-year career because I wanted to continue to see the impact in the work that I did, the impact on individuals, the impact on access and opportunity. So it's been 15 years in higher ed, moving to and through, working on student success, access, equitable opportunity to higher education, and not just to higher education, but through to the other side and to what the future held. And then after about 15 years in that career, I get a phone call from a brand new governor in our state of Kansas as she was building a cabinet. And she had heard about the work that I had done both in government, but also in higher ed, particularly the work in transforming communities, the work that was sustainable and impactful, and asked me to join her cabinet as her Secretary of Administration and Chief Technology Officer for the state of Kansas. I would do that for 4 years. I walked into that role in the middle of 2019, excited about what we could do for the state and this new administration. And lo and behold, less than a year later, COVID would happen to us in the world, and we would be the administration that would lead the state of Kansas through a time that was truly unprecedented. I believe we were the right administration for that. I believe we brought with a set of women leaders. The governor had 5 female cabinet leaders during her first administration. We led in a way that I believe put people first during that time. And it was an amazing time, that 4 years, and a very difficult time. But with that, and with family and many other things weighing, I stepped away from that, took an intentional pause, in some kind of way found myself sitting in my current seat about 6 months ago as the new president and CEO of the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation. That's the short version, Lauren.
I mean, there are so many areas that I just want to probe, and like, I want to hear more about China, and I want to hear but I actually met you. We actually met when you were still with the State Department, when you were working for the governor. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was so excited to see you because you have an air about you. Like you it's like energetic dignity, and I don't know how to express it any better than that. Like, I've got the energetic piece down, but like, you bring such a positive vibe while still just remaining so professional and so brilliant and so smart. Like, I've heard you speak and I've heard you express yourself so many times, but I love your vibe. And one of the things that I have to tell you, and I'm sure that you hear this all the time, but you know, president and CEO of the Kauffman Foundation, it's a big deal. It is a big global deal. And for those of you out there who maybe haven't heard of the Kauffman Foundation, I don't know how, but that being said, that's not my journey. It's not my deal. You know, the Kauffman Foundation, it is a multi-billion dollar foundation with a global reach. And I mean, the constituents that you serve, they fill all corners, come from all backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And so it's a big job. Yeah. And I'm really curious, the thing that I want to know, and I'm not sure if many even in the Kansas City area know, because it's the announcement shook Kansas City to its foundations. Kansas City is very much built into the tapestry of the Kauffman Foundation, because Ewing Marion Kauffman cared so much about Kansas City. And so the foundation has always kind of prioritized activity and outreach and making sure that they're staying engaged in their roots. You know, this is where we came from. Kansas City is the city that we love and care about. So we who live here, we have always seen that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But now, yeah. And it, but so, the announcement, it kind of, we were just like, oh man, what does this mean? Like, this is important to us. This is a big deal. And then ever since, we have seen you're doing these listening tours. And from what we can tell, like, and we talk about this, like the ecosystem builders here in Kansas City, like we talk about the fact that we're like, Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace is here to listen to us, to hear our thoughts and our struggles and our challenges. And then we see you actioning that feedback. Like, it's fabulous. Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace, you have excited us to our core. But I want to talk to you a little bit about that. So the first question that I have is, what attracted you to the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation? Like, I'm sure they had an executive talent search firm or something like that. But like, talk to us a little bit about your thinking process in joining the team.
Yeah. So one thing about the foundation, and you said it, you know, Lauren, is that it is interwoven into the tapestry of this community. And I am actually from Kansas City, born and raised. And so in many ways, I grew up with Mr. K and the foundation being a part of what I thought of home, right?
Yeah.
So for me, one piece of the pull to the foundation is being able to take all of that experience that I just talked about, those amazing networks and individuals and opportunities, and to leverage that back into the place where I started, to leverage that back into the communities that supported me and made me who I am. Like, that is one of those full circle moments that you just don't always get in a career.
Yeah.
And so that was one piece of it. But I have to say the other piece of it is because I have worked and traveled around the world. I have worked at higher ed institutions like Stanford and the University of Missouri and the University of Kansas. And my networks move through both nationally and internationally, that I also know that the Kauffman Foundation has been at the forefront of so many conversations, particularly on the entrepreneurial side, but also with education, which have been our two longest standing tenants and which we fund into. We've been a part of conversations that not only drive issues in the future in this community, but also nationally, internationally, thinking about what does it mean to be an entrepreneur? What are the ecosystems that must be developed to be able to support and to help them thrive? And not just let's create ecosystems, but the work at this foundation over the years has also been about let's learn. Right?
Right.
Learning. It's a deep part of the work here, the research. How, what do we understand? When we understand it, how do we use our platform to amplify it? And when we do that, how then do we have a ripple effect, not just from the day-to-day work that we fund, but the learning from the work? And that for me, as a policymaker in my career, as an educator in my career, as that native Kansas Cityan, you know, you put all of that together, and this foundation and the work that it does in Kansas City, in the region, nationally, and the impact that it has internationally is just truly unmatched in terms of opportunity. So for me, I received, I think, a gift in that I was able to marry kind of a hometown love and appreciation with this kind of international scope, scale, influence, and impact that you just couldn't walk past that opportunity, or at least I couldn't walk past that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, so you have clearly found a position that it's pretty rare to find the kind of job that utilizes all of your history and all of your lens. And so you found a position that you're in alignment with. It's so evident to anybody who sees you out in the community operate. We're just like, oh yeah, that's a woman who's doing her purpose. Like, you're exactly where you're meant to be. You can just tell because you have a certain amount of, you feel comfortable in the role. And I'm sure that, like, even especially in the beginning, I'm sure that it was probably overwhelming. Like, you were you were trying to learn so many things all at the same time. And it was so interesting to watch, be on the outside looking in as you're driving great change, transformational change within this organization. Anytime you have a huge change in leadership, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, and so there were all these question marks, like what's going to happen to the culture? What's going to happen to Kauffman's priorities? How are these things going to change? And then, of course, how does that trickle down to the communities that we serve and to our interests, you know, as folks who are active in the entrepreneurial ecosystem? This is a big deal to us, you know, and it has the potential to have a lot of implications and ramifications that we probably don't even know of. But here's the thing that I need to know from you, because this idea, this fascinates me. Your approach is so novel in this community. D'Angela, you are so hands-on and so you interface with people directly. Like you're very much on the ground. And I know in corporations and in large entities and institutions, like you don't often see that level of leadership so deeply embedded in the community work. And so like when you started, I know that you were super intentional. You did this listening tour, and I think you're actually still doing it as far as I know, you know, and it might not even ever end, because that learning piece, clearly that's a driver for you. And that's an ongoing process. But like you were talking to community organizations on the ground, grassroots organizations that deal directly with the people that you serve. And you were doing it in such a empathetic kind of way. Like it came through. So if you are ever wondering, did it come through? It came through. Yeah. But, you know, talk to us a little bit about that. I want to hear more about your approach to community building, because it's a little different from what we're accustomed to here on the ground in Kansas City.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, excuse me, it has been, so one of the things you mentioned, listening tour, I pushed my team very early on and I said, I wanted engagement. And I don't know if you remember, because you follow me on LinkedIn, and I encourage people to follow me because I like
posting. I have followed you for a very long time.
Yes. And I love like posting and telling people where I am. And I like posting and telling people where I am because I want them to be there too. Not because, and I need to say that, because I post a lot and we try to be intentional about it, because I know a lot of people follow me and I want them to know the good work that is happening all over. And if you're following me, I want you to know about these other entities and organizations who are actually doing the work, right? And it's why I like to post and highlight. And so I digress, but you know, early on, I put up a post and I told people, like, reach out to us and give me opportunities. I didn't want to do just a listening tour. I called it an engagement tour. I wanted to engage. I wanted to be out. I said, if you have an event coming up, if you have an activity, if there's something I can come see or do, I don't want to sit in my office like it's some ivory tower and say, please come see me, right? That, right? Like
I'm pretty sure that when you did that rolling out the blue carpet, Dina Newman and I curtsied to you to the new
right place. I know.
But you looked so uncomfortable. I was like, let's not do that again. Clear, like you're not an attention seeking person for someone who's in such a visible role, by the way.
Part of it is just this idea of like, I wanted to be in places. And so you mentioned my blue carpet. When we started, there were so many people who wanted to meet me. And then it began to be like, okay, let's do this reception and let's do this reception and we can invite this group of people. And then we'll identify this group of people. And I was like, no, let's invite everybody. Right. And my team was like, huh? Right. And I said, let's open the doors. And we're like, and we'll roll out the red carpet. And I have an amazing director of strategic communications. And she said, Dr. D, how about we roll out the blue carpet? And I was
yes.
Right.
And that was so much fun, by the way. Like
it was.
kudos to your director of communications, because that was way fun. And
the part of that night was we opened up the foundation. We hosted close to 300 individuals. And for those of you who know the foundation, we have a state-of-the-art conference center that is free and available to 501c3s in our communities.
Yeah,
it is truly one of our biggest assets for our community and support our nonprofit community. But we did not host this open house at the conference center. We hosted the open house in our office. We opened up our doors and we used the back courtyard as the reception because it's symbolic. We were opening the doors to the foundation, right?
Right.
That tenant is huge, right? And you were there, Lauren.
Well, so I was going to say, and we actually talked about that. I was at the Coffin Foundation yesterday, and we were talking about the fact that, like, there were many of us who had never been to the foundation side. So the way that the building works, there's the foundation side, and then there's the conference center side. And most of us, even though we are all of us who happened to be on Coffin grounds yesterday, we were all really active within the entrepreneurial ecosystem. That's why we came together. But some of us had never been to the foundation side, had never. And so, yeah, like there was a lot of symbolism in that. You know, you were wearing shoes that had been decorated by kids from the One Pair program.
Yes.
You were extraordinarily intentional about including messaging from Ewing Marion Kaufman, who's like, he's the guy. He's the one that we all.
And one of you remember, we had vocalists, we had local artists, we had local. A barista. We had all of the food, much of the food, desserts, treats. So every vendor that we used that night was a local entrepreneur.
Yep.
Okay. And we did that purposefully because I said to my team, we can give grants and we do. We are a grant maker.
And but thank you for that, by the way.
Of course, right? But what is an entrepreneur? They have a concept, an idea, a talent, something that they have created that they are passionate about, that they want to share. So one of the most powerful things that we can do with an entrepreneur at our foundation, beyond our grant making into ecosystems, is exactly make them
a supplier.
Right? Make them a supplier. Put them on our actually supplier list, right? Make sure we are using local entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs of color, right? And in saying that, when you come to my open house and you have that cup of coffee and you say, where does this come from? And that individual that owns Bonafide says, my father grows these beans in Guatemala and ships them to me on a regular basis. And she grounds them and has wonderful and amazing coffee that I first had at my very first 1 million cups, right?
Yeah.
Like 3 weeks on the job, I went to 1 million cups. I had her coffee. And I was like, 3 weeks later at my open house, I was like, she does the coffee switching. Exactly. Yeah. Right?
Well, and you don't always see that level of layered intentionality. Like it's weird. One of the things, so with Innovate Her, one of the things that we have always done is we support women owned or women and gender minority owned first, all the time, every time. And I've actually had to have, let's not call them arguments, we can call them debates with members of like leadership, because they're like, well, we can get it cheaper somewhere else. And I'm like, doesn't matter. Our foundational value is that we support women and gender minority owned first. That's it. Hard stop. Now, the only exceptions to that are when people donate, which I'm like, hey, you know, come on. But then the other exception is if we cannot find a woman or gender minority owned provider, you know, and that's only happened once in the 5 years. And like, that is how you have to be. It's I have a friend, her name is Cecilia, and the thing her saying is, it's not my lens, it's my eyes. It's not even the lens that you're looking through. It colors everything, that level of support. Now, I do want to tell you folks about another organization that is incredible at support. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. And friends, we are here today with Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace, who is the president and CEO of the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation, a beacon of hope to so many in the education and entrepreneurial space across the world. This is a global foundation with billions of dollars worth of assets, and they use it all. They use all of their manpower, all of the assets and resources that they have to support entrepreneurs. And we're talking to Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace. There, how long have you been in the position now? Is it almost a year?
Oh my goodness, no. So I am just crossing into my seventh month.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yes.
I have no conception of time. It's really like ever since the pandemic, I'm like, I have no idea what day it is. Just don't ask. But wow. Okay. So 7 months. Now I want to talk to you. I'm going to turn our conversation a little bit to the work of the foundation, because we've kind of talked about the way that you view leadership. And that is a beautiful thing. But I'm really, really curious. We keep on hearing about strategic plans for the Kauffman Foundation. And I'm not going to ask you to share things that are happening behind closed doors that you're not ready to share just yet. Although you have been remarkably transparent about the things that are happening at the Kauffman Foundation. But talk to us a little bit about your leadership of the foundation. You know, you stepped into this new role. You are applying new lenses that, that happens anytime you bring somebody into a new role. You're assimilating and you're integrating, but you're also bringing your perspective. So what do you see coming down the pipeline for the Kauffman Foundation? Are there ways that you intend to change? Are there things that you want to lean into that the foundation is doing extraordinarily well? And there are many things that they do extraordinarily well. But talk to us a little bit about that, kind of your personal leadership of the foundation. What's coming down the pipeline?
Yeah. So what I will say is that, you know, our legacy of our work really sits in education and entrepreneurship, right? We've been leaders in those spaces for years, and those are at the heart of Mr. K's kind of intent, and we follow that based on our guiding principles. One of the things for me is not so much about, oh, we're going to turn a corner and no longer do education and entrepreneurship, but it is important to think about that work and the work that we've done over the years and the legacy of that work, and think about the future and what that work needs to look like, right? So for example, for me, as we think about kind of this moment of a strategic refresh is what I'm calling it, it's about what is the impact that we want to have in our region and around the world, right? And at the core of Mr. K's intent, he talked about communities controlling their own economic future, that they had the control over their economic prosperity. And the role of the foundation was in helping to remove systemic barriers, to understand how to take down those barriers, to inform, educate, advise those that controlled those barriers, to allow access and opportunity. Because when communities are armed with their own economic possibilities through things like education, credentialing, workforce, business ownership, they then have the ability to build wealth and assets and direct their own future. That's the work of the foundation for me as we go forward. And an important piece of it is that business ownership, particularly for women and individuals of color, has an exponential impact on their ability to build, sustain wealth and generational wealth, right? They are controlling their resources, and that type of control has an elevation of power and direction, not just for them, but for the greater community. When businesses are in those communities, communities grow. Communities build assets and wealth that give back to those communities, right?
So it's a two-pronged approach, because not only are you financially empowering the individual, the entrepreneur themselves, but we know that women and people of color reinvest back into their communities. And
yes.
So they're hiring local, and they are using vendors and suppliers that are local, and they're donating to nonprofits on the ground around them that are operating in their neighborhoods. And so, yeah, I mean, when we talk about entrepreneurship, we talk about it, it is a great equalizer. It is a great opportunity. Often, and I will say, one of the things that I know, and I'm fairly certain that I know this because of the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation, but we know that women and people of color are starting businesses at a higher rate than any other demographic group. In particular, women of color, I believe that is the fastest growing segment of entrepreneurship in the United States. Not sure about globally, but I would say, I would go so far as to hazard a guess that it's probably true and tracking globally as well. But that being said, one of the ways, in a lot of ways, entrepreneurship can be a safe haven. You know, people who have been denied access to opportunity, what do? Well, for some people, you start your own thing so you can create your own opportunity. It's an equalizer, and it is a democratizer to opportunity on so many different levels. How does it feel to be working for an organization that so meaningfully supports that kind of work?
Again, for me, it's one of those things that have just always been foundational in who and what Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation is, right?
Yeah.
And so in this moment, I'm excited about how we continue to elevate that, how we think about how does this work need to evolve. We have, over the years, done substantive work in kind of that startup space and that foundational space, even with ecosystem building and support and learning cohorts. One of the things is that how do we capitalize on that legacy of learning and information? Are there new and different ways or conversations that we need to make sure are continuing to happen? I'll give you a great example. We had one or two organizations that said they used our Fast Track program, which is, you know, kind of a module learning about like how to get yourself that startup space. And it's been around for, you know, any number of years. It is a tested curriculum. They said, we went through Fast Track 10, 15 years ago. It was great. It gave us everything we needed. Now we are here and doing well, but now we're looking at what does profitability look like? Now we want to grow to the next level of accessing capital in different types of ways, of accessing contracts, right? At different national levels, right? And so you think about that, and it's one thing to say, okay, give us a minute, let us build some things and push them back out. But now, because of the legacy of the work that has happened in the space, because of the beautiful networks and deep, rich learning and partnerships that are there, how in this moment can we say, wait a minute, we don't have to start from scratch. Let's lean into the legacy and the learning and say, are there things that we can amplify? Are there convenings that we can help to stand up? Are there things that need to be invested in differently that help understand that we have the early stage ecosystem and we also have that middle of the road ecosystems? And now we need to make sure that we have that next level of elevation ecosystems and that each part of those ecosystems are just as strong for our entrepreneurs, right? So it's opportunities like that that we don't have to be bound or constrained solely by the legacy of the work. but it's the opportunity to understand how does our work need to continue to grow, get deeper, thrive, broaden as we go forward, and most importantly, to meet on the needs that align with community. It can't be us driving our agenda for our own sake. It must be in response and in service to the communities for which we serve.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's why it's so heartening to see that listening piece coming in and really like that immediacy. Like, I don't think I can express to you how impressed people that I mean, I talk to people operating within this ecosystem every day, all day long. And so many have come to me and been like, I can't believe that she talked to me, you know, and I know that that's like a weird, but people have been so impressed at your willingness to not just hear, not just listen, but like you're there, like right in front of them saying, hey, we're going to put a face on this beautiful monolith that has supported so many of us for so long. Like, please don't think that we're not grateful, but like, it's different having you be the face and have you right in front of us saying, look, we're here. Yeah. We know that entrepreneurship is a suck sometimes, and we're going to be here to help you through it. We're going to get you data. We're going to get you information. We're going to ask you what you're going to need. We're going to find ways to deliver it. We're going to give the grants and give the thought leadership, and we give it freely, but now we're doing it in a way that is so accessible and so transparent. And it's been just a really beautiful experience. Now, I do want to ask you, and I do, full disclosure, I have a friend who has asked me to ask you this, and I'm not going to tell you who it is, because I don't want to embarrass him. But when he found out that I was going to be interviewing you, he was like, I'm super curious about this. I need to know. So I'm really curious as to how, you know, we've talked about the fact that you have experience in academia, you have experience around policy and government, and now you're in the nonprofit world. Like you have experience in so many different verticals. How is working in the innovation space different from working in, say, academia or in nonprofits?
So I would actually say in many ways it's not, right? So the beauty of the public sector, like federal government, state government, and even higher education, is that you always have to be innovative because you never have enough, right? Yeah. So like I feel like I have built my career on like, all right, people, let's think outside the box, let's problem solve, and let's find every opportunity that is available to us, right?
Yeah.
When you're in the public sector, this is key and critical. When you solution in public environments, in public sector environments, it really can be transformative because so many of our public sector environments a lot of times become the bottleneck, right? Or the problematic area, right? Yeah. Higher education is also a space and place where what I will say is that I came up, I did my undergrad at Stanford University. And I remember showing up at this university and being told by faculty members, by staff, that I was the creator of new knowledge, right? At like 18. And I'm like, what? I'm not. I got to take a test and learn something and fill out, you know, at the time, a Scantron, I'm dating myself, right?
I remember those.
Right? So, you know, and I was told, no, when you dream, when you think, when you innovate, when you use your creativity, right, you are creating new knowledge. And that is what you were made for. I have held on to that in every space and place. What I will say about philanthropy that is different, say, than government or even higher education, is that, and this may sound good and bad, there's less rules. I mean, really, like in government, it's like, you can't do that.
We like about it.
I know. That's what I'm learning, right? Because in government, it's like, no, that's regulated. That's a no, right? And then in higher ed, there's not as many no's as in government, but higher ed has its traditions. It has its structures. It has, you know, its history. So it has certain and different constraints, and it's a sector, right? The beauty of philanthropy is that in many moments, it can flex and be agile. It can be curious. It can be generous, right?
Yeah.
It can be empathetic, right? But to do that, and most importantly, it needs to be intentional.
Yes.
Right? But for it to do that, those of us who lead must bring that tenet to the table, right? And
right.
So I hope that in the time that I've sat in this seat, that people see that those are the things that I hope that we're bringing. And I tell people, if you've heard me talk or any of, you know, anytime I'm talking, I always still say, now, wait a minute, we're not going to get it all right. I'm going to ask for grace. Because we're going to try, we're going to do some things. Everything might not land exactly the way we need it to. What I commit to is that we are going to be present. I commit that we're going to be in service and in partnership, that we are working to do this work in alignment with the communities that we serve. And that when we don't get it right, that we will acknowledge it, we will learn from it, and that we will work to show up differently. That's what I commit to, because we're not going to get every piece of it right. But that commitment to showing up, that commitment to the listening, to the engaging, I think and I hope will continue to serve us well, so that our work goes beyond metrics. Our work goes beyond counts of how many dollars we give out and really moves into the space of collective impact. What is it we want to see in our communities? How do we want to see our nation move differently for women and individuals of color who are leading and innovating in terms of what they are bringing to market and into their sectors? Like, how do we want the world to look different in 2030 and 2035? And what is the work we have to do today to chart us on a path that makes that difference a reality?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, so I'm going to ask you the human question in just a minute, but I do have one more question that I want to use to close this out. But I'm so impressed, and I love that idea of empathetic community impact. I think that therein lies the core. When you do work that is powered by people, then you need everything needs to be imbued with people. And how do you human, and how do you make this an empathetic process? So I love that. I do want to ask you, you know, on this 2024 Women's History Month, do you have any words of wisdom for the female founders out there, the women of color, the LGBTQIA women, the individual, the gender minorities, the individuals who are out there trying to do the thing, make it work, and really looking up to you as an example of leadership. What do you have anything that you want to say to them?
Oh, this is such a great question. I'm actually doing a keynote tomorrow for 1,100 women at a conference called Lift Her Up. And I've been thinking around it. Yes, I'm so excited. Right. You know, there's a piece that I want to say to those leaders: to give yourself grace. What I have found across my career and with friends and colleagues, I mentioned when I was at the state, when I was in the cabinet, there were 5 female cabinet members at the time under a female governor. The 5 of us would come together, and there's only about 10, 11 members of a cabinet, of this cabinet. So understand, we're about half, right?
Yeah.
We would come together monthly and sit around a table and have dinner and talk about work and people and families and nothing and everything, right? And part of
the best conversations.
Well, because part of it was we didn't have to be on. We didn't have to be secretary of this and secretary of that. We didn't have to explain where we were or what we were going through. We could be and be in a circle that understood both the professional and the personal, that understood the frustrations and the triumphs, right? Mm-hmm. In those moments, that grace to be would carry us through the tough days in front of the legislator, would carry us through the policies and the closings during COVID, would carry us through bringing our staff back in and having to make sure we were keeping them safe. So when I say give yourself grace, begin to understand what you need to be whole, to be successful, to be well, and give yourself enough grace to build it, to ask for it, to demand it from others and from yourself, because we are not our best self as leaders until we do that.
Yeah. As you were talking, I was about to cry because I your experience just resonated with me so hard. I mean, that's why Innovator was founded.
Yes, I know.
There is great peace and great power in being able to surround yourself with people who understand your journey, that you don't have to explain yourself. You don't have, like, I can look at you and Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace. I don't know the minutia of your journey, but I know that you are a woman who has busted your ass and has achieved and done incredible things. And I know pieces of your journey just because we share pieces of that journey. And so, yeah, that absolutely resonated with me. Now I'm going to ask you the human question. And
okay.
I'm very curious, you know, what do you consider to be your super? I have an answer. I have multiple answers, but what do you consider to be your superpower? I need to know.
So I believe that my superpower is perception. And in that kind of an evolution of like talent identification is what I would say, right? But it's because, and here's why, like, I love and believe I have honed a skill at really understanding people quickly and deeply, and being able to then connect all of the dots in my universe for their greater good, right? Like, I think, like, it's so funny in my mind, I love The Incredibles. And so when you see that, I think of Freeze and his wife is like, why do you need your super suit? And it's like, woman, because I am trying to help the greater good, right? That's
what it is. Why do you need to know? Right. That's what she says.
It's like, but that piece of when I meet an individual or an organization that I am working with, like I tune in to who they are, what they're doing, what their journey is, you know, what their next level, what they're trying to achieve. And my mind just instantly goes, who do I know? What have I been exposed to? Who can I connect them to? Like, I think it's why me and you jive so quickly, because I think we're the same person, like in different iterations of self.
It's really interesting because as you're talking, I'm like, not you're saying things, and I'm like, people have told me that. Like, I scan rooms, and I do not have a lot. I am a generalist. I do not have a lot of specialized talent, and I'm fine with that because generalists play well in startup spaces. I can do a lot of things, a little bit, just enough to get us through. But that being said, the thing that I am good at, really, really good at, is identifying talent and surrounding myself with amazing people and then figuring out how to create connections and touch points. I'm a connector.
Yes.
That's the foundation. And so, like, when people start talking to, and it's because that's why Innovator has been as successful as it has, because
exactly
that's the lens. Like, that's like my lens suits our purpose, right?
Yeah,
it just makes sense. So, like, as you're talking, I'm just like, oh my gosh, are we the same person?
We are. We really are. But I also think that's why we connected so early on, because while, and you know, it was probably well over a year, if not longer, before we ever met. But when we met in person, it was like we had been connected.
Big old hug. Yep.
Because the work that you did, the work we were doing, it lined up so well when I was at the state that I kept pushing individuals and opportunities and programs towards Innovate Her and asking for them to come back to us as well, right? And so for me, it's that moment of like, okay, this is an organization that is doing what I'd like to do. So if I can help, if I can make connections, if I can push, I don't know if you remember, we started WISE, Women in State Employment. It's a women's affinity group for state employees. And I connected WISE with Innovate Her because I wanted the women who were working in state employee to have a network like Innovate Her, because I'm like, hey, women in state employees, you need others around you. You need resources. You need connectivity. It's why we created the organization, right? And that still lives on today at the state, which I'm so very proud of. It's one of the things of all the things I did at the state that I am most proud of, because I know those women in state government are some of the hardest, most amazing people that serve the state of Kansas, and they need to be poured into and lifted and supported and guided and directed like every other individual. And so that's it. So yes, I think we have a piece of the same superpower. I think we are probably, I don't know, twins before in another life and moved in parallel. And I love it.
I gotta tell you, like that is the greatest compliment that you could give me, that Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace and I share anything, and not only anything, but like something so, I'm very proud to be a connector, and I love seeing it, like game recognized game, like I love seeing it in other people, but no, that's incredible. I gotta tell you, and I keep using your honor, I love honorifics, especially for women, like you earned that doctorate, so I will be calling you doctor, so if it feels too formal, that's why, but Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace, it has been an honor to have this opportunity to sit down with you. And thank you so much for sharing so freely of your wisdom and expertise and experience.
No, thank you for having me. This has been a pleasure and a joy to kick off this Women's History Month. Having the moment just to celebrate the work, the conversations, and the journey. Sometimes as women, we want to tone down what we've done and what we've accomplished. And please know that your work, your expertise, it has to be your fire. You cannot tone it down. You don't, turn down like that work that you earned it. You did that work. So to be able to share some of that, to share some of the work of the foundation, to inspire and challenge and just be in community with entrepreneurs around the world. Thank you all for the opportunity. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I could not end it better. So I will just thank you to Dr. D'Angela Burns Wallace. And I also want to say thank you to FullScale. If you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, FullScale can help. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions and then let our platform match you up with fully vetted, highly experienced software engineers, testers, and leaders. At FullScale, we specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io, or you can click the link in the show notes. Friends, it has been an honor and a pleasure to bring you Startup Hustle in Women's History Month. Super excited to be back. And as always, I will tell you, entrepreneurship is hard, but we are here for you in the hustle. And we thank you for coming back and listening time and time again. Keep on doing it. And we will catch you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.